I am mining investor and editor of Resource Stock Digest, Gerardo Del Real, here with my partner, Mr. Nick Hodge, who's also an investor and the publisher of Daily Profit Cycle. This is the 362nd episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. Look, y'all, we even got shirts. We're going to talk markets. We're going to talk what we're investing in. We're going to talk about all of the crazy stuff going on, which seems to escalate and get sillier by the week. But before we get into all that, first and foremost, Mr. Hodge, how goes you, sir?
I'm doing good. I've seen the naughty things on X or Twitter where the girls go like this and then they take their shirt off on like the third pop. It's not going to happen with me today. No titties for me. I'm doing very well, Gerardo. How are you doing?
No competition for Christy Gnome's husband from youth this week, huh?
That's it. One of three cabinet members to resign this year. We'll get into it.
Oh, we're absolutely going to get into it. Look, before we get into that, because if we get into that, we're going to be here for hours on end and we're not going to get to the markets. But let's get into the markets. For all the chaos in the world, for all of Trump negotiating seemingly with himself online, we hit brand new record highs, all-time highs in the major indices. So we've said before, the economy is not the stock market and the stock market is not the economy, just like gold isn't gold equities and vice versa, right? So what to make of the overall indices hitting new all-time highs while, you know, at least the sandbox I dabble in exclusively, the resource space continues to be trade like in a sideways pattern for the most part, except for, you know, exceptions with M&A and companies making significant discoveries. We'll get into that later on as well. But what to make of the overall indices, Nick?
I mean, it's a simple explanation, except it doesn't make any sense. You've got a dollar that softened. As we started April, it was at about 100 on the DXY. The dollar index went down below 98. A weaker dollar allows for assets, stocks, commodities to go up. And that's what's happened in most cases. The other thing you've got is an earnings season that is underway, and companies doing really well on the earnings front. I think something like 15 or thereabout percent of the S&P companies have reported and are showing over 30% earnings growth. That's what the market's trading on for the moment. The fundamentals outside of those stock earnings and the weaker dollar are seemingly out the window in terms of the growth and inflation that I typically cite. You know, we're still expecting a growth slowdown. It, not just in the U.S., but globally, given the high oil price and the energy shock that the market seems to just be tuning out and completely ignoring, even though you have some really big global energy and trading firms warning that if we don't get this strait open fairly soon, as you and I have been saying, there's going to be some pretty severe consequences. And then the other thing you have is inflation going up. So still in a relatively stagflationary environment, but the market, as I said, is tuning all that out. It's trading on Trump's headlines, which sometimes don't make sense. And he's jawboned it in conjunction with those earnings and falling dollar to new all-time highs, as you said. And that was good for commodities as well, which have been perking up. We'll talk about the CRB index in a second. And you still got some range-bound things, like we had gold recently at 4,800, now down to, you know, with a 4,600 handle on it. And we had copper at $6, and that's starting to level off a little bit. So a lot to pay attention to out there. I'm not necessarily buying this rally. I think we still have a little bit of reckoning to do. And as I say, as I've said before, you know, patience can be an asset allocation, and having a little bit of cash is okay too.
Yeah, no, look, I absolutely agree with all of that. You wanted to talk about the commodity index, and I think that's a great segue into the resource space and kind of what we're seeing. What we're seeing is increased M&A, right? We're seeing companies like Agnico using their robust balance sheets to come in and invest some $3+ billion in Finland, consolidating a large, large, very, very rich belt that, as you wrote so well in your Underground Alpha issue that I just got done reading about half an hour ago, it's clear that companies are looking for long life assets. It's clear that they're looking to scale. It's clear that they understand the cycle that we're in. And I think we're going to continue to see aggression on the part of majors and mid-tiers. And I think some of the juniors and developers are starting to recognize that. We'll talk about that a little bit later on, with companies being really aggressive on cash raises and banks being really willing to write checks even without warrants. So a lot to get to on that front. But the commodity index, what are you seeing with that there?
Yeah, let me touch quickly on the Agnico Eagle deal, because worth noting that we financed very early on in its life Rupert Resources in what is now called private placement Intel. I think we made some 400 to 600% in that deal. Now, we've long sold. We're not shareholders now, but a testament to the quality of deals that we get ultimately being taken out by Agnico Eagle. And then congrats to Aurion Resources. That's the Aurion that was taken out. And I think not just the M&A is going to continue apace, but I think companies looking for quality assets, and that's going to bode well for some of the project generators of the world as well, that have some district scale and drill ready projects that majors can come in and option or JV on. But I think I fixed my my screen sharing thing since I got this new laptop, but I'm able to share. So maybe we'll look at the CRB commodity index for 1 second if I can get it up here.
Well, maybe next week my headphone echo will be fixed. We're live, folks. And so, you know what's worse than one hit out of the Del Real in my voice? Two hit out of the Del Reals in my own voice. So thank y'all for bearing with me. Although I know y'all can't hear the echo, I can absolutely hear my own echo, which makes me feel bad for the people around me that have to deal with my talkative hyper self on a daily basis. But back to the chart, Nick.
You're doing great. Hanging in there for sure. Sorry you got to deal with the echo. I know how annoying that can be. This is the CRB Commodity Index. I was showing this chart a lot in the 2021, 2022, 2023 timeframe, arguing and saying that a new commodity super cycle kicked off in 2020. This is a basket of 19 commodities. It includes gasoline and silver and hards and softs, wheat, etc. And I hadn't looked at it in a little bit, but I punched it up on TradingView the other day, and this is what popped up. I didn't draw these lines. I had all this stuff already on there. I think probably from a previous foundational profits call-in that I had given, and I was asking then, probably a couple of months ago, is the next leg starting? Like, that was already typed on the chart. And sure enough, look there.
Some
on the right hand.
Good looking legs right there.
Look at on the right side of the chart there is we've had a breakout, you know, from a cup and handle. As the oil has gone up, as the copper has gone up, as the wheat has gone up. And it seems like we're firmly in the middle of, you know, if you look at these past runs up in commodity super cycles and the retracements, you know, we're square in the middle of a commodity super cycle that still, I think, is going to deliver not only commodity price increases, but related equity price increases, as we already said, as those majors come and scoop up quality assets that are going to drive the supply demand equilibriums that need to be rectified, that are nowhere close to being rectified, all the way down the line from aluminum to zinc and zirconium, right? So you're seeing lithium start to get a bid again. I've seen some uranium stocks this week up 8 to 10% in a single day. And it's clear, just based on this CRB commodity index chart, that the next leg of this super cycle has started. So that's exciting to see. You know, nothing grows to the sky, of course, although that tree does look like it's growing to the sky. I wouldn't be surprised to see more volatility ahead, especially that it's been subdued in recent weeks with no real closure, except for the strait, no closure on the war. So we'll have to see what happens. But this is a really good looking chart, and I wanted to share it because, like I said, I punched it up the other day, and I was surprised that I was asking the question a while ago, and it looks like the question has been answered, that, yeah, the next leg is starting.
Love some nice legs, love some nice cups, love some nice handles. Got a little bit of all three in that chart. Very well done, Senor Hodge. Very impressive work. Let's get back to the actual commodities. Gold, silver, thoughts on where we are in that bull market. I know that we pulled back below 4,700 today. Curious to see where we close on the week. Silver at 75. Both were substantially higher earlier in the trading session and pulled back on reports that there is no deal, basically, and that, you know, Trump is playing six-dimensional chess with himself, and that there doesn't appear a willingness from the Iranians to give up any of its nuclear enriched supply. And, you know, I don't want to pretend to be a geopolitical expert and get into like the ins and outs of that. But frankly, if I'm Iran, I wouldn't either. Right. I mean, this has been long established. This has been a country that's been not peaceful to its own people, but peaceful to at least the U.S. So for us to get involved and to demand that, I think on our side, we have to know that's a non-starter. I don't think Iran's going to flinch from that stance. So I'm curious to see where this goes. The price of oil is reflecting that. The dollar sharpening up, strengthening up a little bit today is reflecting that. The pullback in gold and silver today, I think, is, again, risk capital saying, let me wait a little bit. Even if we're in that next leg higher, let me just wait and see. And let's see what the weekend brings. And we know Mr. Trump is notorious for Good Friday headlines, right?
Yeah, I mean, you said it exactly right. Not a lot to add there. You had a dollar that was really strengthening up into and during the first couple of weeks of the war, and then softened as we got these peace and truce and negotiation headlines. And you can see that now the market's not buying that, which is exactly as you said, and the dollar's turned back around. And I think that's what's given pause to a gold price that was, you know, up around 4,800 and now down, as I already said, just below 4,700. And that's sort of the range, right? I would expect to bounce off these levels in the gold price in the next couple of trading days here. And then silver sort of 75 to just above 80. So as I was saying last week, the ranges are now, you know, getting lower as the volatility has fallen off a cliff in the VIX and in the gold volatility as well. Oil volatility is still relatively elevated, and oil has perked up just a little bit here too, but nowhere like it was in the March and really early April timeframe.
Well put. Look, I hate to belabor the point that we said last week and the week before that, but the real world implications for all this, you know, in Europe, they're talking, you know, the potential for a depression if the strait continues to be closed, not a recession, not stagflation, you know, like we have here. We have stagflation here. Clearly, we're not in recession territory yet. But for Europe, we're talking the potential for a severe, severe depression and food shortages that are going to just not be good and completely unnecessary. But sulfur shortages and the downstream effect of that. I couldn't help but notice that copper had a spike. It pulled back a little bit today on the spot price, but it was up above the 605, 606 level here a day or two ago. It's pulled back and settled around 595, 596. Any thoughts there? I know Australia is easing some of its fuel restrictions because of the shortage and to compensate for the fact that, again, we're seeing very real effects of the strait being closed.
You know, those are the headlines, right? We'll see what happens. I already mentioned the Trafigura warning. It's saying that the market is mispricing the amount of risk that's behind or below the surface of the street staying closed. One other thing, and it's really hard to say what it is. I was interviewing on the Corlin report the other day, the KE report, and they were asking the same question. And I sort of stumbled for a little bit trying to come up with a reason. And
yeah.
You know,
there's no easy answers.
There's a couple of things, right? I mean, you have the long-term known dynamics of the copper market, right? And we still have to solve for the supply. Two things I ended up pointing to. One is the AI is back in vogue. Like the technology sector of the S&P, the XLK, and the NASDAQ back to bullish. Microsoft, Google stocks looking good again. The AI trade and the risky trades are back on. Bitcoin is, at least in the short term, bullish. Chris Curl's calling it a bull trap. But nonetheless, it's been appreciating over the past week and a half or so. I don't know the level off the top of my head, but all that to me says, you know, is this data center and quantum computing trade is back on, then, you know, one of the underpinnings of that is the copper market. And if you look at stocks, like I always say the name wrong, it's like I want to say GE Verona, but I know it's GE Vernova, and a stock called Vertiv. I mean, they've been absolutely crushing it. Those are like the infrastructure plays for the AI side of things. And we know one of the major inputs to that is copper. The other thing is like China is bullish. They're having economic growth, and a bullish and growing China obviously consumes a lot of metals and then minerals. And so two things to point to there for why copper is doing what it's doing, in addition to the risk that you cited with you know, the potential for further supply curtailments if folks can't get the acid and the other things they need to run their mines and mills.
Yeah, speaking of China, look, USA Rare Earth just announced plans, speaking of M&A, getting more aggressive, to buy Serra Verde in Brazil in a deal that's worth $2.8 billion, right? And the motivation behind that is China's dominance of the rare earth space, specifically the processing of it, right? And so the heavies being what goes into satellites and missiles and defense systems and all of the things that we need to defend, you know, national security globally, right? Every country needs them. And so that stuck out to me. That was something that it definitely was noted. The other thing that was noted is the U.S. trade representative spoke and commented on the deal, Jameson Greer. And what he said was, there is a premium we pay, and I will call it the national security premium, and we will all pay a national security premium to have a secure supply chain. And so when I had a great interview with Neil McCallum of Q2 Metals, I'll give you a couple of freebies for the fine folks that are bearing with us this week. But I had a great interview with Neil, and we talked about the monster resource. It was like 295 million tons, and it's a maiden resource estimate of like 1.4% lithium. And what I said initially when I spoke with them a week ago was, I think Q2 Metals ends up with the biggest lithium deposit in James Bay. But I think PMET ends up being the most valuable critical metals company in James Bay. And both things can be true. And we talked about that here a few weeks ago, I think, in the premium portion of the podcast. Critical metals are going to command a strategic premium if they are centered and located in safe, friendly jurisdictions. And again, I know we're getting a pause in the lithium space here the last several days. I think a pause is healthy. We had a run-up, a substantial run-up from the lows. I think a pause is really healthy. PMET is one to watch, because I think that stock could be in double digits really, really quick as it continues to develop the lithium aspect of the business. But again, PMET on coke, right? Also continues to develop the critical metal side of the business. And if there's one thing that Ken Brinsden knows how to do, is take a company from here to here and establish an entire supply chain with heavyweight partners, which is exactly what he has been able to do with Albemarle coming in, Volkswagen being at the table, and now the deal with Coke that was announced over a week and a half or so ago. So, no, look, keep an eye out for the critical metals plays. Nick, I know you have a couple in your services that you manage and run, and so I think that trade is very much alive. And I think, back to China, bringing it full circle, they've played this beautifully. They're not funding a war. They're not losing soldiers. They're not depleting their missile arsenal. They're not, you know, diluting the heck out of their treasury. They're not inflating their citizens into oblivion. They're ahead of the EV infrastructure race. So when you have $100, $200, $300 oil and gas here in America is $6, $7, $10 a gallon, China's sitting there just counting cash, right? Not really heavily reliant on it. And so, no, look, I hope for a better world. I hope for a smarter world. I hope for a world where we do things a little bit more intelligently. I couldn't help but notice that another Navy general just resigned this week after months of disagreement with our Secretary of War. So take that for what it is. I'm not a general. I'm not a geopolitical expert. Those people are, and the people that are the smartest ones are all leaving and jumping ship saying, nope, we're not doing this. So,
yep. Yeah, I told you last week I was reading the book Mineral War that's been cited by folks in our industry. I'm making my way through it, and I feel like I've read the book before, because, and it's all the things that we've been saying for years. And I know I said that last week, maybe in 2 weeks, I'll read you some passages from it. But it makes a couple of points very clearly. One is that, as you said, this defense industries are acutely reliant on some of these things. And it puts a finer point in saying that some of the metals, including some of the metals in the companies that you just said, like cesium, for example, are reliant on only one or two mines in like the entire world that produce the stuff. And so a very significant precariousness of supply. The other thing it says, and we know this, right, anecdotally and intuitively and in our heart of hearts, is that you know, we're a capitalist in America, and for the past couple of decades, and maybe even longer than that, we assumed China was going to play nice and acquiesce, and the invisible hand of capitalism was going to necessitate them to, you know, play with resource development and acquisition the way that we play in the West. And that's not how Homie plays in the East. They played very differently. They were, while we were worried about carbon emissions and not wanting to build things at home, they were dumping effluent into the river, processing the rare earths that you've already mentioned. They by far have the highest emissions per capita of any developed nation as they've gone on this industrial path over the past couple of decades. And in doing so, has solidified exactly what we're talking about here, this moat of not just production of the metals and minerals, but the processing and the purification of them as well. And I've said these words, I feel like a million times in the past couple of years, but they're really coming to the fore now. And you're starting to see that more widely recognized, which is one of the things that's needed for a bull market, right, is new money and new blood and new deals and new recognition. And I feel like we're starting to see that now.
I couldn't agree with you more. So back to the original question, gold, silver, copper still in bull markets on your technical analysis. That's a trade is still in play. Uranium, how are you feeling about uranium?
What is it on the spot? You
86, 87.
Yeah, I was going to know that off the top of my head. You seem to follow the contract price more closely than I do. I mean, yeah. And speaking of China, I should have included this. I was reading this week that they now have the capacity to build 50 nuclear reactors at the same time.
Yep.
And in this country, we struggle to build one. And it takes us a long time and it runs over budget. And again, that has to do with the regulation and the way we play in the West. A little bit off topic, but it's like the Key Bridge in Baltimore, right? What was that? It's been 2 or 2.5, maybe even 3 years since it's gone down. And it's not going to be back up for like another 4 years or 5 years or something like that. I think they're projecting 2029, which means 2031 in America, right? And that bridge was built in like a year or under 2 years the first time it was built. And that's the problem in America. So to answer your question, I think uranium's fine. I think the stocks are performing well. I think they, and most of these are I know, not I think, I know that they were soft in the past month because I added to names like Energy Fuels when it was down around 18 bucks. And I'm pretty sure it's back well over 20 at this point. It's coming up on earnings here. And other names in that space have done well as well. So no, still a uranium bull. And I think uranium is coming up on a good leg here as well.
Yeah, it's funny how quickly it moves, right? I was writing a couple of weeks ago and mentioning that the long-term contract price was at a three-year high. And, you know, as of this week here, or as of April, it's breached into the 90s. And that makes it, you know, like a new high since roughly, I think, 2008, give or take, which, again, is pretty, pretty significant and a pretty damn friendly trend if you're watching that, right? So, again, those charts all have legs, folks. I know it gets boring at times with consolidating prices or sideways trading or lack of catalyst for a couple of months, right? That is the time when you should be accumulating and adding to positions and topping positions off. When things, you know, get overstretched and hit those higher valuations real quickly is when you should be trimming a little bit, right? We could all be better at that, a present company included. So just a word to the wise, like right now, this pause in uranium, this pause in lithium, as far as the equities go, those should be taken advantage of. I hope that you have a list and are checking it twice, because that's how you end up with a great Christmas and a lot of gifts under the tree.
Charts here should be up. This is the URA ETF. Not hard to see that this thing is on the door of wanting to break out. So you would need it to make obviously a higher high than it made back here. But if it gets above, you know, the $60, $61 level and it's coming up on it at, it's currently at 56, you know, that would be a new bull market. And there's nothing above that chart. That's blue sky. And since you're mentioning it, let's look at the, did I type that right? No, lit. You want to talk about lithium. And these are just not anecdotal, but oh, look at that chart. Good Lord Almighty.
That's pretty.
Look at that 1 year chart. Let's see where we are here. Same thing, sort of about with lithium. Got to move your head so I can see the chart. Here we are here. So, I mean, look, it's already taken this level, did some consolidation from back in 2021 and near the tail end of the last boom, consolidated here in February 2026 around that level. And now it's going to try to take this, right? It'll have to take this level first, 86 and change, and it's at 82. So very similar story to the uranium bull market. But if you look at it on a one-year time frame, look, that lithium market is back and ready to play.
Yeah, couldn't agree with you more. Again, check that list. Check it twice. Make sure you have the better names. Whatever your sandbox is, folks, whether it's producers, developers, the explorers, or a combination thereof, have a basket of those critical metal plays that include the rare earths and that include lithium and that include uranium, because those trends and that demand isn't going anywhere soon. And again, just to say it again and emphasize it again, there will be significant premiums paid for companies that have quality deposits and discoveries in great jurisdictions, a la Rupert, which we mentioned earlier, right? It received a 69% premium to its last closing price when the offer was made. And so kudos to them. Congratulations. Congratulations. I had a great interview with Thomas Credlin earlier this week, who's now at another company. We'll talk about that in the premium portion of the podcast. But he firmly believes he'll take a couple of months to reorganize that company. And, you know, in his words, I didn't have $4,700 gold when I was with Rupert and started building that. He does now. And I couldn't help but take away the excitement that notice was one of my big takeaways. It was the excitement that he had in his voice for getting to work over at the new company. So congrats to him, and obviously wishing everybody continued success on that front. Market wise, anything else you want to get to, Nick? Because there is a lot to get to on the this week or in Are You Fucking Kidding Me world.
No, I think we covered it pretty well. Same as last week. 30 minutes has passed. Very hastily. I think we nailed all the main points. Maybe some housekeeping before we jump and lose people that don't want to hear us rant about that stuff. We won't be here next week. We're going some boots on the ground in South Dakota and then and on to Wisconsin. So maybe we'll report back. You will get a special feature next week. I put that together today. And I guess that's it. There was something else I was going to say, but I lost it. So onward to Bizarro World.
Let's get to it. Congress is very horny. Congress is very hypocritical. You knew that. Congress loves taking taxpayer dollars and putting it in their own pocket. Congress, at least a lot of the Republicans, are outwardly and openly considering a pardon for Ghislaine Maxwell. If that is not a sign of the times, I don't know what is. Look, we had Rudy on here several months ago, and we've been very, very on this Epstein Files thing for many years and disgusted by the fact that here in America, at the very least, there haven't been anybody that's resigned and been arrested for anything, despite the fact that Ghislaine was charged and convicted by a jury of child sex trafficking and sex trafficking. We never found out to who.
Right.
The victims have come out. The victims have been brave. And look, obviously, not all victims are coming out because the re-victimization is a very real thing. But there's been a lot of really, really brave women that have come out and said, yep, I was trafficked. Yep, I was raped. Yep, that was me. Yep, this is who did it. Despite all of that, we're being told by Pam Bondi's replacement that there will be no further arrests in the Epstein case. And also, they're not going to release any further files. They're not going to release the ones where child deaths, rape, and torture are on video. Because releasing those would tell you who's doing the child raping and torturing, right? And killing. For all of that to be true, none of that is tinfoil hat conspiracy theory stuff by Gerardo Del Real. These are known facts established by our own Department of Justice, which is heavily biased, obviously, towards covering this stuff up. Now we're talking about a potential pardon for this lady as she sits with her puppy in a minimum security prison. I keep saying I can't believe like that's real, but I can't believe this is real, Nick.
I mean, they say it's, you know, they're going to give her immunity or pardon or whatever in exchange for testifying. But, you know, if you believe that, I've got a bridge to say, given what you just said and given the history of this case. You know, we got Pam Bondi, who's no longer with us. As I said earlier, three cabinet members have now resigned, and you've got nothing but lip service the entire time, from, you know, the stack of files on her desk to all the redactions that were in the files. I don't think you're going to get anywhere on this. And it's not like the DOJ and the FBI isn't willing to do things. They're out there opening cases and prosecuting all sorts of other stuff. And maybe we'll talk about some of that other stuff because it's certainly on the list here today. But they haven't been willing to do anything on the Epstein files, and I don't expect them to. So we'll see if they give them justification, what the given justification is, and if she does end up with a pardon. But just absolutely reckless and crazy and spits in the face of the American public, frankly, who wants some transparency and accountability on this issue that is obviously very real and affects all corners of the government and both sides of the aisle.
Yeah.
Even the Kevin Warsh, the gentleman who is slated to replace Jerome Powell as the chairman of the Federal Reserve was being grilled, as the media would tell you, this week by the Senate Banking Committee as he goes through his confirmation process. And turns out this gentleman has investments in entities that were set up by the man himself, Mr. Epstein, and still holds them, by the way, said that he would get rid of those investments if he were to be confirmed as the new chairman of your non-elected, I would remind you, Federal Reserve.
Again, they're not even lying about it anymore, y'all. Like, he's just like, yeah, still got those. Those have been good. Like, Jeff did his thing. I wasn't going to sell those because they raped, tortured, and killed kids. Crazy. But if you let me go do this thing over here and be the new Fed head honcho, I'll get rid of them. I'm worth $100 billion. I could afford it. It'll be all right. Or whatever he's worth. He's worth a lot of money. It's crazy out there. So look, let's talk about...
One more thing. Same as Jerome. Same as the troll lady before him. Same as Bernanke. All wealthy folks from, you know, Wall Street, private equity, some of whom are neighbors. And so, look, man, it's a big club and you ain't in it.
And inflation is always transitory, folks. And what does the price of gas matter to a Donald Trump or a Howard Lutnick or a Kevin Warsh or any of these people? So look, after the Galeen thing, everything else that happened, as crazy as it was, seems lighter, right? I mentioned the general in the Navy that stepped down amidst clashes with Peter Hegseth, which... Again, there's been like 20 something of these now from the Army, from the Navy, from various branches of our military. So it's not like a one off, or it's not like one department or one group of people that just don't get along with the guy. Clearly, there's a pattern there. But a part of what also came out this week is a top Trump high ranking official, a counterterrorism official for the Department of Homeland Security, 29-year-old Julia Barbaro, hi Julia, has been put on leave as a result of James O'Keefe, of all people, had a video that Miss Barbaro was a sugar baby. And for those of you that don't know what a sugar baby is, it is, you know, a woman who has a profile. I guess it could be a man. I don't know how it works, but a woman that has a profile that, in exchange for gifts and having a transactional relationship, is willing to be your partner, you know, and in whatever capacity they agree to. And look, like Kristi Noem's husband and his lopsided boobs, like, you know, Glenn Greenwald liking, you know, his things in the privacy of his own home, I don't have a bone to pick at all with Ms. Varvaro choosing, at 29 years old, beautiful woman, to want to have transactional relationships. If that's, you know, good for her. What I do have a problem with is when she's a Homeland Security official and a counterterrorism official, and she's out here, using those, that access and that influence and those connections to essentially potentially blackmail officials sure. that have defense contracts. The gentleman that was involved in the video that James O'Keefe leaked that was giving out national securities classified information to Ms. Varvaro had something like 57 defense contracts. So if she's out here sniping our own people in exchange for, here's what it said on the site. Barbaro created a profile of the sugar daddy site Seeking, on which she offered seductive sophistication. I did not want a sugar daddy prostitution relationship after spending $30,000 to $40,000, said the gentleman, for vacations, Cartier jewelry, expensive handbags, and various shopping trips. So she said, look, the only reason I don't have college debt is because sugar daddy's paid for my college education. I have a serious problem with this administration's lack of vetting of the backgrounds of the people they are putting in power to guard this nation's secret, especially in a time of war where geopolitical alliances are fragile at best and getting shifted by the day. It is reckless. It is irresponsible. It is immoral. And I can't believe that the amount of vetting that goes on is so futile and amateurish that they can't catch this, that they can't find Kristi Noem's husband's fetish account in the background somewhere. And a James O'Keefe can find it. And the person that outed Kristi Noem's husband can find it.
Giordo, they can find you with a cave from your heartbeat in the middle of Iran.
Thank you.
Or Iran.
Iran, yeah. Look, she's on leave. So there is that. I want to talk about Sheila McCormick stealing disaster funds, charged criminally. And even then, she was like, I ain't going.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I mean, to the Democrats' credit, at least they said, yes, you are. And you're getting indicted. Like, no, you're not staying. So I'll give the Democrats a point for that. I'll take it back immediately for how long it took to actually get her up out of there, right? The fact that you could just show up for work and everybody knows, I think it was like $5 million that they accuse her of pocketing from these disaster funds. And again, this isn't money that like Jerome is printing and she's pocketing. This is actually money that was going to help victims of disaster relief, right? And so that need a disaster relief, victims of disaster area. So yeah, I hope she gets what's coming. Labor Secretary Lori Chavez de Ramirez, she got a thing, you know, for the guys and maybe the girls. I don't know. Again, no judgments on that front, except you're the Labor Secretary.
Drinking on the job.
Which is probably the least that she was doing. How are we not vetting any of these people on either side? And it goes back to our conversation, Nick, that we had a couple of weeks ago about the leading candidate at the time for governor of California, Thomas Sewell, with everyone from all sides coming out saying, oh yeah, open secret. Everybody knew about his bad behavior. Everybody knew about his bad behavior. And he was just allowed to become like the next in line to be the governor of one of the biggest economies in America. Are you kidding me? I can't make any of this stuff. This writes itself. I don't have to, because you wouldn't believe it if I wrote it.
It's bizarre. So that's the third. Going back to the first thing you said there about Sheila, I think she's got a hyphenated name, Cherfilis McCormick. She's the third congressperson to resign essentially in disgrace this month. Eric Swalwell, who you were just talking about, who was running for governor, had to resign, and everybody knew. Senor Gonzalez from your state of Tejas resigned amid sexual scandals.
He's affairs. From up the street from San Antonio. He was pressuring this girl so much that didn't want to have anything else to do with him. She eventually set herself on fire and killed herself.
Jesus Christ.
Everybody knew that. And he was still allowed to keep his position.
And now Sheila. So she's the third one. And then the labor secretary, who you mentioned, Lori Chavez de Ramirez, is the third cabinet member to resign as well. And so these are the people in the club. These are the people in charge. These are the leaders, the officials. And it's crazy, man. You know, there was a tweet going around this week where Iran was saying, we don't know who's in charge. And then somebody tongue in cheek said, bitch, we don't know who the fuck's in charge either. Like, what's going on out there? It's wild, man. So it's
funny, not funny, man.
And I'll just keep it going on some of the other topics on the list. I'm sure you saw the Southern Poverty Law Center is on the hook.
I got now thoughts and opinions about that.
Oh, my God. For you know, and we've
give the people the context there, Nick.
We've talked about, you know, going back to some of these protests and rallies on both sides, right? From the on the right, the neo-Nazis and white supremacists in Charlottesville, to the people on the left, the Antifas and things like that. And we were saying, even here in Spokane at times, that there was paid agitators and people who come in from out of town and things like that. And now
federal informants.
Correct. And now it's out there in the open. So the Southern Poverty Law Center was, again, back to the DOJ doing stuff. You know, the DOJ is indicting them or opened a case into the Southern Poverty Law Center for essentially paying informants and folks who were in far right and white supremacist groups who caused some of this stuff. I think they were paying the gentleman who set up the rally in Charlottesville several years ago where things went awry. And so, you know, again, bizarre world, fourth turning, can't believe anything you see or read. You gotta verify and double check your sources and who's saying what. And I'll talk more about that in AI in a second, but let me hear your opinions, because you're getting this. And the other thing we've said is, in the middle of America, outside of the, not outside of it, and one of the things that's causing this extreme partisanship is these people who are in charge, right? Yep. These institutions, these NGOs, these Southern Poverty Law Centers. It's in their best interest and the politicians to keep you divided, to keep you guessing, to flood the zone, as it were, right? So you don't know what's going on or who's causing what.
Or what's real.
Now the proof is slowly coming out. And, you know, that's what ultimately is going to lead to the other thing that I mention a lot is the ekpyrosis. It's the ultimate burning down of these institutions, right? So anyway, that's the context. What do you got?
Yeah, no, look, for those that are familiar with the SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center, they came to prominence for prosecuting and tracking hate groups like the Ku Klux Klan, right? That's the foundation from where that group was born and has continued, much to the ire of right-wing extremist groups, to do that. And so what's being alleged, I'm of two minds about it, to be perfectly honest with you. On the one hand, everybody does that. Everybody, including our government. I remember in 2019, when we first started this thing, us having a conversation during the Black Lives Matter protests and everything else that was going on at the time, and me urging people to, yes, protest, but do so peacefully and don't get rage baited by the people out there, because a lot of those people are government agents or government informants that aren't officially on a payroll that the U.S. citizens like myself could track, because they get a monthly stipend with bonuses and increases. And I asked the question back then, how many informants are on the payroll? In what groups? Well, of course, they're not going to disclose it. So the same reason that a government wouldn't disclose that it's got federal informants trying to infiltrate an organization, which is always the cover, which, funny, not funny, and ironically, is the justification for not leaking the Epstein files from people that don't want to leak the Epstein files. They're saying it's a national security issue. If we put these names out, then it has implications for national security around the world, which you all know how I feel about that. And if it's got to get torn down, it's got to get torn down. Can't just rape and torture and kill babies and women and girls and boys and you know, hide it under the guise of national security. In this case, what's being alleged is that they were funding these groups. What the SPLC has countered with is saying, yes, we absolutely provide funds to informants that infiltrate these groups. And that is how we're able to launch the investigations oftentimes that we're able to launch and work hand in hand to dismember these groups or bring attention to these groups. So I'm at least willing to listen to the case when the defense actually makes a defense. Should it be happening at all? No, I've long been against, you know, you see it in the prison system, you see it in society so often, where you're seeing it right now with ICE, right? Where one of the wives or ex-wives of a politician had his baby mama, his ex-wife, deported. Right? Because he was kind of tired of her. And she was like Brazilian and was here legally, but on a visa that could be revoked easily. And so he had her sent away. And then, you know, you found out like who actually did the reporting, and it was anonymous, but it wasn't anonymous. A lot of this stuff, it happens in the shadows. It's hard to justify any of it if you don't know what's actually being done and what the end game is. And there is a difference between investigating an organization and actually becoming the inciting force behind an organization you want to bring down. The same way there were agitators that were paid to make the BLM riots look unpeaceful, despite the fact that polls showed that 97 and 98% of them were peaceful protests. The headlines that you saw on CNN and on Fox and everywhere else were about the rioters and Antifa and the people that were burning Seattle downtown down, and the people that were throwing stuff around DC, even though that was a minority of the groups that were protesting. So if those protesters that were agitators were paid by any group on the right or on the left, yeah, that should not be happening. That itself should be prosecuted, in my opinion. Nobody should be doing it. So if that's what happened here with the SPLC, then yeah, absolutely. Go after them, indict them, let them defend themselves in court. Let's see what it is. But if what they're being indicted for is just infiltrating organizations, not actively participating or orchestrating physical riots, violent riots, things of that nature, then yeah, in that case, then that's a different conversation, and I'm willing to see what the trial paperwork looks like when that comes out. I'm very curious about that case.
Well, we're going to see. Let me read to you from Reason. Newsletter here. It says the Southern Poverty Law Center is manufacturing racism to justify its existence. Now, that's according to the acting attorney general, the gentleman who replaced Bondi, who's not going to release the Epstein files. And
Or
according
arrest
to that,
anybody.
that's right. And according to that indictment, they're saying the Southern Poverty Law Center paid $3 million from 2014 to 2023 to members of racist and neo-Nazi groups that it was surveilling as part of its cataloging of hate groups. But one single member of a neo-Nazi national alliance was paid $1 million over that period. So a third of the funds, essentially, if
Yeah.
it's 3 million, and one guy got one. And then another informant, who they're saying is the organizer of that Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, was paid just over a quarter mil, $270,000. So it's 11 counts, and we shall see.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing how that shakes out and whether or not they even allow it to go to court. Because I don't think, frankly, the way that government uses informants and how under the radar and in the dark that is, I don't think it's in anybody's best interest to actually see this in a courtroom, with discovery and defense and, you know, prosecution and all of that. I think it's going to spill a lot of beans that both sides don't want spilt. So curious to see if this ends up being one of those situations where there's no culpability and a fine is paid as long as they promise not to do it again or do it in a way that incites violence, right? But I definitely want to see the details and see where that goes.
I need some beans. I made a ham yesterday, and I'd like to make some soup with the leftovers. So I would love some spilled beans
There
because
you
I need
go.
them.
Maybe you can find you an AI robot that can do that for you while you record the podcast one day, Nick.
I'm going to talk to you about AI in one second. Quick, before we get off the real bizarro stuff, is the gerrymandering, right? We don't have to spend a lot of time on it because now both sides are doing it. And I think
Correct.
it's just a further de-escalation of, not de-escalation,
Escalation.
dissolving of democracy,
Oh,
right?
yeah.
True representative democracy, when you're just redrawing the districts at the state level to get the outcomes you want because you have control of the legislature at that given time. So, and this is now par for the course. Both sides are doing it. Both sides get victory. Both sides get their panties in a bunch when the other side is doing it, and then they turn around and do the same thing. So happened in Texas not too long ago, as you know, because you live there.
Yep.
Happened this week in Virginia, which is sort of a 50-50 purple state. And now they've redrawn the district so that they'll get more Democratic legislators in Congress after the midterms and thereafter. So both sides do it. Both sides suck. That's all I really had to say about that. Just wanted to point it out.
Couldn't agree with you more. I know you want to talk AI. I got to give Trump kudos for one thing. Well, kind of two things, but they're similar. One, the DOJ finally rescheduled marijuana from like it's as serious as heroin to no, it's not, right? Like, because everybody knows that, except for Tom Cotton, who, anyway, he had a little tweet earlier that I was like, anyhow, I'll leave that alone. But the other part to that good thing that Trump did is he also eased restrictions on psychedelics for PTSD treatment, which has proven very, very effective in almost every study that I've been able to peek at. And again, I'm no doctor, I'm no researcher, but I can read a little bit and I can connect dots a little bit. And I see people on both sides, and I see troops and I see combat veterans, and I have buddies that, you know, suffer from PTSD that have benefited greatly from it. All speak to how much healthier they were mentally as a result of being able to use medically prescribed or medically overseen psychedelics as a way to cope with PTSD. And so, you know, Trump said he did it because Joe Rogan texted him and said, hey, my buddy said this really works. Can you look into it? And I guess Trump responded, well, what do you want me to do? And Rogan said, can you just like make it easier for this to be okay and legal? And he said, yeah, I'll do that for you. You want to come to the White House, take a photo with me? And big photo op. Kudos on that front. I applaud Joe Rogan for reaching out. I applaud Mr. Trump for getting that done. I almost applauded him because he put this post on Truth Social, his Twitter network. I almost applauded him for saving the lives of 8 Iranian women that were protesting in Iran, had been arrested, and were due to be executed any day. And so he put this post thanking the Iranian lawmakers for listening to his pleas to not execute these women, and that they would go ahead and follow Mr. Trump's advice as a goodwill gesture. He thanked them for their goodwill. And then he posted that they were only going to do 1 month in prison now, and that several of them were going to be released. And the only problem with that story is that these 8 women that he supposedly saved were AI generated women. They weren't real. The images weren't real. The situation wasn't real. And again, Iran's media had a blast and a field day saying, what are you talking about? They're as real as the negotiations that you are partaking in with us, which are non-existent right now. And so, it's 2026, man. The bingo card is insane. My bingo card would have to be like the size of this wall and probably all the walls put together. It's insane.
Well, a couple of good, really good setups there, in fact. So you were talking about psychedelics and how you do the reading. You know, animal spirits are back in the market because one day this week there was a psychedelic stock that was like the most heavily traded stock by volume in all of Wall Street. Not Google, not Microsoft, not Tesla. This little tiny psychedelic stock. So Trump can certainly drive the markets, as we know. And I wonder how many people took a stake in it before he signed the thing about the psilocybin and the psychedelics. But anyway, you said a couple of things there. You said you can do some reading and, you know, connect the dots. And you also said that, you know, Mr. Trump was duped into thinking that these couple of women hostages are
prisoners,
right, were AI. You know, he's not the only one that's getting duped by the AI here recently. So those are the couple of stories that I wanted to talk about. I'll stick with the medicine because that's what you were talking about with the psilocybin. So this researcher, her name is, she's from, I think, Sweden, I believe. That's right. Almira Osmanovic Thunstrom. She got this idea back in 2024 to come up with a fake disease and post a fake paper about this fake disease, about itching, watery eyes. And she called the disease, doesn't matter, but it's fun. So let me see if I can find it here. It was called, where the hell is it? Bixanimania. I can't pronounce it because
Vixenomania.
Yeah, there you go. and so she put this paper out there and she started, you know, tracking what was happening. Well, soon enough, even though this term doesn't appear anywhere in any legit medical journal or research, it started showing up all over the place. She says that within weeks of her uploading the information about this fake condition that she attributed to a fake author, major AI intelligence systems, including Gemini and ChatGPT, and Claude, who I don't believe responded for comment to this story, they began repeating this invention to folks who were Googling the symptoms. Like people would say, oh, I have itchy, watery eyes. And ChatGPT would be like, oh, you got Bixonominia or whatever it is, right? And even worse than that, it says even more troublingly, other researchers say the fake papers were then cited in peer-reviewed literature. Peer-reviewed medical journals were starting to cite the fake paper about this fake disease. And then it just spiraled on down from there. So the article goes on to say that, you know, all the guys, ChatGPT and Google, Gemini, et cetera, are saying that their models are better now and they're training them not to do this sort of thing. But just be very, very careful with the information that you get from the artificial intelligence and your little little chatbot there, because, you know, the things that it read on the internet, as we long know as internet users of many decades, if it's on the internet, it must be true, right, Gerardo? And the AI just picks that stuff up and incorporates it into its models. And the more entertaining one is this. This law firm, one of the apparently most prestigious law firms in the country called Sullivan and Cromwell, was caught recently putting AI-generated errors in their motions for a U.S. bankruptcy court in Manhattan. These errors in which the AI was just making stuff up and using it in the case were found by the opposing attorneys. And the interesting thing here, quoting the New York Times, says Sullivan and Cromwell is one of the oldest and most prestigious law firms in the country. It is representing President Trump in several appeals, including his criminal conviction in 2024 in a case that stemmed from a hush money payment to a porn star. So then it goes on to talk about the law firm and they say they're sorry, et cetera, et cetera. But here you have, again, one of the most prestigious law firms in the country representing the president in a porn case, which, again, get out your bingo cards, is just using fake AI shit in their motions for trials and proceedings. So if that ain't the bizarrest shit that's out there, then I don't know what is.
I would like to commend the porn star, because now she is a successful comedian and a successfully published author. So shout out to Miss Stormy Daniels, who is an excellent follows on the X and the Twitter for all things humor, of course. It's crazy out here, Nick. Look, I hope everyone has a great week. Let's get to the premium portion of the podcast. It's been an hour, but I'm sorry. That's the nature of the world right now, folks. I appreciate y'all hanging out. Let's get to it. That's all we got for you this week, folks. I am Gerardo Del Real along with Mr. Nick Hodge. This was the 362nd episode, and maybe our longest one yet, close anyway, of Investing in Bizarro World. Have a great week, everyone. We'll be out next week. We'll be at a site visit. We'll report back when it's time to do so, but you will have something in your inbox that Nick is putting together for you all. Take care, everybody.
See ya.